The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another award-winning rendition of the UAB Director's Chair. We call it the UAB Director's Chair because we have the UAB Athletic Director, Mark Ingram, who's the bottom of the screen here, and a very special guest, Trent Dilfer, the UAB head coach, joining us here on the big show this week. Trent, coach, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
Oh, I'm great to be here. Thanks for having me, Tony and Mark. And I was all concerned when I was setting up my Zoom here in my office, like, okay, I got to get the background right. I want the fans to make sure they get a good look. And then Mark gets on in his car and I'm like, oh, good. I feel great. I feel like I'm in studio right now.
You got the shades.
Yeah, you're good.
You need to put the shades back on, brother. You really do.
No. You can make fun of me all you want. I'm good. I've been made fun of before.
Well, listen, Mark has been great because, you know, a lot of people do shows here on Tony Curry Radio, and I've got about 14, 15 unique shows, including this one. This is one of our most listened to shows. And he is like religion, man. He is here every single week. He is on time. He's ready to go. He's prepared. We talk a little classic rock, which we'll do with you at the end of this podcast. And he is on. So where were you, in Cincinnati or something? And he set up something in a hotel lobby or something. Where were you at a couple of weeks ago when you were on the show and you were in a lobby somewhere? Mark,
you talking about me?
Yeah, you were set
I've
up.
Done it from coffee shops. Done it from hotel lobbies. I've done it from we were I was on the road, I think, with men's basketball somewhere, and we were in the hotel lobby. And I've done it from a hotel room at the conference basketball tournament. Traveling around last year when we went to Annapolis play football, I did it from a coffee shop. So
that's great.
Hey, man, you got to be ready, on location, ready to go.
That's right. And that's what these podcasts are.
From your luxury SUV on 280 somewhere.
Hey, listen, you're not allowed to drive. That would be illegal, Coach Dilfer. You're not allowed to drive and do this sort of thing. I would not do that.
Okay. You're pulled off the side
pulled
of the
road. Pulled off to the side is what I meant.
I'm pulled off to the side of the road, ladies and gentlemen.
We can see out your back window, by the way, so we know if you're lying.
No,
14 C's, the quarterback in the National Football League, a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Trent Dilfer joins us here, right here on the UAB Director's Chair. And Trent, I'm so happy to have you on because I did sports radio for over 20 years, and I love talking X's and O's. I put Mark on because not only because he's a good friend of mine, because we like to talk behind the curtain. We could talk about game from game, and, you know, what was it like in that third down conversion you had, blah, 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 blah. And everyone's asking these questions, and we like to get a little broader than that. We talk about UA Sports and UABSports.com, but we like to talk a lot of college sports in general. So there has been so much going on in college football alone, everything from NIL, transfer portals, NCAA, we're talking about player unions, the legalities of the NCAA, will it even exist at the end of next year, realignment, UAB going to the AAC. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. And here you come into the UAB program to coach. Did you have any idea that all of this stuff was going to be happening within a times period when you first got on board at UAB?
To a certain degree, you know, I think one of the things I said last year, and Mark and I talked about this when we were going through the process, is I didn't know the old way. I'm not a college coach. I didn't grow up in the college coaching profession. I hadn't been in college football since 1993 when I played. Now with my Elite 11 experience, I had a good enough perspective from dealing with all those recruits for so long of what, from their side. I think from the high school chair, I was able to see it from the parent and kids side, as well as the coaches coming to meet with me, and got some good perspective from them. I don't think anything surprised me. I think the intensity of the challenges are a little more than I could have anticipated. It's the goalpost moves every day.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, it's hard to make a 32 yarder when the goalpost is moving. It's hard to make a 6-foot putt when the hole's moving. You know, I think that's the analogy I would use of what we've experienced is, you know, Mark and I will sit in here and we'll go, hey, guess what just happened today? This rule changed. Yeah. And you're like, okay, you gotta go find a solution. You know, I think Mark and I are wired the same way. We don't talk a lot about problems. We talk a lot about solutions. We know we can't control the problems. They're coming, and I think they're coming in even a more intense rate here in the next probably 2 years. But we have to be out ahead of them and finding solutions. And I think that's why we have a good working relationship, because we're, whether we agree with each other or not, we're always trying to move forward.
One of those moves, the Jim Harbaugh move this year, and I think it surprised a lot of folks. He takes Michigan to a national title, and of course, he jumps ship and goes to the NFL, and a lot of people are like, why wouldn't he? Why would he want to be a college football coach? It's hard, man. There's a lot of work to be done there. Has there been anything after your first year that's really surprised you?
Well, I will say this. Let me speak on that real quick. And I talked to Jim, and I were on the phone Sunday for an hour, actually talking about a bunch of things. I was picking his brain on some stuff from his time in college football. Because remember, he, everybody remembers him in Michigan, but you know, he built Stanford kind of back out of the dust. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, when he was at San Diego, like there's a lot of lessons learned for what Jim did at San Diego than to go to Stanford, than to go to Michigan. So we were talking about that, and we were talking about the college. In terms of being a head coach, was like being in college opposed to the NFL. And the grass isn't always greener. And he knows that. You know, the one thing here, I'll give a little story. Like we have a bad road loss. Let's call it Navy. That was a horrific road loss. Mm-hmm. You can't, my wife's sitting next to me. She's not even pretty. Like they're giving me food and it tastes like crap. Like I don't want to see my kids. Mm-hmm. I don't like my kids when you lose to Navy on the road. And you're sitting next to your AD. Like Mark and I are sitting next to each other on the way back. It's like, that's my boss. And he's pissed too. NFL is totally different. Take that little uncomfortable situation and amplify it 4,000x.
Yeah.
Is what it's like being a head coach in the NFL. You lose a bad road game in the NFL and they're trying to fire you on the tarmac. You know what I mean? And it's uncomfortable. Your sponsors are there. Like it's just brutal. Losing in the NFL. And I think some of these guys are jumping to something they think is going to be easier when in reality it's not.
Yeah.
Competing by nature means hard things. And anybody's trying to run away from hard things in a competitive environment is fooling themselves. I like the hard things we have here at UAB. They're hard things. They're challenges. We confront them every day. I like the people I'm working with. I like the challenges there. I like the kids. I love the city, as I've said a million times. So I guess I kind of took on a tangent there, but it is important to have perspective that Joe Schmo leaves head coaching job of a place to go be a coach somewhere else thinking it's going to be easier.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to be easier. It's going to be different.
UAB Director's Chair, we do it every single week. Of course, you can hear it 5 times a week on the TKR app. And wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we're available on every major industry, including here on our YouTube channel. Trent Dilfer on the top left-hand corner, of course, the UAB head coach, joins us here for this week's rendition. I did want to ask Mark at the bottom of the screen. Mark, I said this when you made this hire. I thought it was the best hire in college football, period, last year. I just think it came out of nowhere. I think it was just a great brand move for UAB. I think it was a great step for UAB when it came to the kind of coaching that you were going after. What did you learn about Trent after the first year? Is there anything that's kind of surprised you about him since we both have you on the same podcast here?
I hate to say that this is surprising, but Trent's a man of his word. I mean, he said, and not a lot of people are that. What I mean by surprise is not a lot of people are that. And, you know, a lot of the things that he said he was going to do, if he's been able to do it, he's done it. He's been very well disciplined with our team. The team, meaning he holds them accountable. Their academic standards are high and he holds them to that. He's helped them understand that if you're worried about a paper that you should have started 3 weeks ago and it's due at midnight tonight, you're probably not very good at practice. And every coach will talk about that if a young man or young woman, a student athlete is going through like a family situation, right? They've got a parent or a grandparent or a sibling that's sick or passed away or a bad breakup with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. These things impacts everybody's life, right? Like you become distracted and that's understandable. And schoolwork is the same way. And so he's helped them understand that they can be better football players, better at what they want to be at, stronger, and more competitive on the field with fewer distractions. And that includes taking care of all of your business. Don't just show up to the weight room on time, show up to the classroom on time. And so there's a lot of those things. We put together, or he put together, a plan for community service. We've never been as involved in community service in the sport of football as we are right now. And those are things that I think are important. I mean, ultimately, the fan base wants to win. We want to win. He and I are both competitors. We don't think that because we have a high GPA and give back a lot of hours that therefore we're done and that's all there is. But it's an important part of what we do in educating and growing young people. You know, anybody with children, you raise your kids until they're 18 and you feel like you basically raise them your whole life. But in college and athletics, you know, as a parent, you're now entrusting. It's like, hey, I've raised my child into a young man, and now I'm going to hand my young man over to you, coach. And I want you to turn them into a man, go from young man to man. And that's important. It's important to me, and it's very real. It's not lip service. And so, so I appreciate about Coach Dilfer, and you know, nobody wants to win any more than any of us. And we're confident that he and his staff are on the right path to doing that as well.
And Coach, can I ask you about storming the field and or the basketball court here in just a second to broaden it out a little bit? But I do want to ask you, I couldn't believe it. I was doing some research late last night and I'm looking down and all of a sudden I'm seeing a 14 team playoff in college football. What? We haven't even had a 12 team playoff yet. Now they're talking 2026, expanding it two more teams. Can you explain your thought process on that? If in fact you know what I'm talking about, I just was like, what is this? Now all of a sudden we're expanding to 14 teams before we've even expanded to 12.
Yeah. You know, Mike Leach, have you ever seen that interview he does when he's arguing with the original four? I think they call it the F. What would they call that? The first championship series?
BCS?
Yes, BCS. There's this old interview where he talks about, in high school, this is how they do it. How Division III, this is how they do it. Division II, the NFL does a tournament. The NBA does it. And he's like, everybody does this except college football. Mm-hmm. And the late Coach Leach had just this brilliant way of explaining logic by appeal with humor and sarcasm. And I think he was onto something. You know, I think this needs to become more of a tournament like every other league does. And I think the more teams, the better opportunity for it to become a tournament. I don't know if 14 is the right number. Say, I don't know what the right number is. I'm not smart enough for that. But I do think it makes sense to make this more tournament driven.
God rest his soul. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this. I'm with you. And Trent, I don't pay enough attention to this. I mean, I love football and I love the NFL, but I don't pay close enough attention to, you know, the NFC East, West, North, South division, You know, the divisions, it's whatever. Who gets in the wild card system and how all that really works. But tell me if I'm wrong. You know, you could be in, let's just say, the AFC and get into the playoffs and have a worse record than somebody in the NFC who did not get in the playoffs. Is that correct? Just based on wins and losses in your conference, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so the only thing that I would say against. Yeah, because the there's two conferences that want to monopolize the availability.
The tournament.
Yeah, they want to take the availability into the access into the tournament, and give themselves, started out with 8 of the 14. Now this morning, what you read was 6 of the 14, but that's not the way the NFL does it, right? I mean, they're not. Right. They don't give a predetermined bias that the AFC or NFC is stronger and just is what it is, you know?
No. And if in college football, I mean, Mark and I were in Athens last year and you're playing, you know, the best team in the world at the time. And there's definitely a difference, right? There's definitely a difference between SEC football, Big Ten football, and American Conference football. So I could understand SEC folks, let's just say that, because that's probably who's listening to us, saying, well, wait a second, our fifth team is probably better than your second team. I get that argument. So if that's true, then the more teams in the tournament, the better. And let's figure it out if who really is better, because you're going to get those matchups. You're going to get SEC 5 versus American 2. And I think fans need to see that. I think 14 might be too low of a number because I do think SEC and Big Ten need their people in. I don't think they do if it's 14. I think now they're monopolizing the whole thing. But if that expanded to a bigger number where they could still get their top tier teams in, but yet we can get the second or third team in too. Because I would argue we played UTSA last year. We played Tulane. We did not get to play SMU. Nobody wanted to play UTSA, Tulane last year. None of those Power Five teams wanted to play them. You know, so if you're, ask USC. But let's take Mississippi State, for instance. Say they get in as the fifth or sixth SEC team. I would argue that the second best American team last year, would that be a pretty equal matchup? Like that would be a, that'd be a pick 'em type matchup. Well, now you'll be able to see that in the college football playoff.
Yeah, there you go.
What you're describing there, that's what you're describing, that sort of debate is exactly where we are with the NCAA basketball tournament. Yep. You look at the American Conference this year in basketball, there are really six, seven good basketball teams that all could compete with and or beat a ton of teams that are going to get in from the Big Ten and the SEC and the ACC that are only going to get in because of this predetermined bias that they have a tougher schedule. But, I mean, you go down the list right now, the teams in our league, and we're one of them, you know, South Florida, Florida Atlantic, Charlotte, North Texas, SMU, us, Memphis. I mean, none of those teams want to play us, to your point, Trent. I mean, none of those teams, South Carolina don't want to play us. Mississippi State don't want to play us. They don't want to play us. They don't want to have to face us in the tournament. And but we will struggle to get two teams in, even though they may get seven teams in. So it's crazy.
I do think basketball is even more egregious. Like I'm a hoops guy. I've watched our team play. I watch the American. I watch TV on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I watch these other teams play, and I'd be pissed if I was AK. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
Like, that would be very frustrating to sit in Mark seat or AK's seat, knowing that an inferior team to you is going to get in because conference bias. And I'll go one step further. I've seen this happen the 14 months I've been here. You know, you can't have as much bias anymore because you don't even know what your roster is going to be. So like we're in an era right now that the fan bases are looking, they just got out of recruiting rankings. So they just got having all their battles at the water cooler about recruiting rankings. Okay. Win, lose, draw, whatever it is. Now they're going to start arguing about, oh, my team's going to be better than your team. And look at this guy. We have him. We have him. Our quarterback's back. We have three deep at running back. Our offensive line is big and fast. Our defensive line is gnarly, right? These are all the conversations going on until we get to May and every team gets imploded because of the portal.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, not every, hopefully, but like the change in your team in the summer could be the difference between a 9-win team going into spring ball and a 4-win team coming out of spring ball. Listen, we only lost one player we really didn't want to lose in my tenure here, right? Jalen Key, well-documented UAB to Alabama. I would argue we're 3 wins better last year with Jalen Key. Not because just the one player, but because the trickle-down effect of what happened when he left. And young players having to play too soon, players out of position, the amount of defenses. We changed our entire defensive scheme, our entire defensive identity when he went to University of Alabama, because he was the only person that could run the 3 safety look stuff for us. The Iowa State stuff, all that. So my point being is you better be careful on your arguments right now if your team is going to be better than your team. because we don't know what our teams are going to be. Don't know what,
that's the world you live in.
Until we get into the summer.
Yeah, Trent Dilfer, yeah. The UAB head coach, joins us here on the UAB Director's Chair. He's Mark Ingram at the bottom of the screen, of course, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. You can check this show out wherever you get your favorite podcast, of course, right here on our YouTube channel on Tony Curry Radio. Since we're talking hoops, I did ask you about the Duke game the other night. Of course, there was a rushing the court. It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt. We saw what happened, and now, of course, everyone's saying, hey, listen, we can't see this or have this happen again. We've been doing it on college football fields forever. The SEC wants to throw a $150,000 fine at you. So be it. It's not going to change anything. What's your thoughts on rushing the field / basketball court in our college sports as we have it right now?
Mark or Trent?
Either one of you. I'd love to hear from both of you.
Mark?
Well, so I was working at the University of Missouri from 2002 to 2006. And in four football seasons, I don't know this number. I've tried to think about it since I saw that happen the other day. I'll bet you six or eight times our fans rushed the field in those four football seasons. And when you go back and look at our record, we weren't very good. We were like 500. We were seriously playing Kansas one year. This was, we were still in the Big 12, and the Missouri-Kansas rivalry is nasty. It goes way back to the Civil War, and it's a great one. And this was when we were playing 11 games, and it was the last game of the season. And I'm not kidding you. It was like if Kansas won, they were going to become 3-8. And if we won, we were going to be 4-7. I mean, this was what was on the line, right? Totally just bragging rights. We won the game and our fans stormed the field over a team that is now 2-9, you know, and they pull down the goalpost. First of all, the goalposts come down. I never really thought about it. It's dangerous as heck. Those things are heavy. And if they hit you, they're going to kill you. So that's dangerous. Most people don't know it, but you are trespassing when you go onto the field. You can be arrested. That's if you get arrested, that's what you're going to be charged with, trespassing. We played Nebraska one year now. I get this. We beat Nebraska for the first time in like 26 years when I was there, and everybody rushed the field, and a Missouri student went running at a Nebraska player. And you can see in the video, obviously you can't tell what he's saying, but you can see that the student is, I don't know if he's pointing at the player or just pointing, but it appeared as though he was pointing at the player, and the player decks him, knocks him out cold. And, you know, so who's at fault, right? The player's where the player is supposed to be. He doesn't know what this student's about to do, who's running at him. And so, but he's wearing gear, right? He's wearing a helmet, shoulder pads and all that. And he's however big he was, 6'4" and 240-pound giant, you know. And so you feel bad for the kid because he didn't think he was going to run on the field and get, you know, knocked out cold. And it's a weird thing, man. I mean, this season, it's dangerous for the play. It's dangerous for a lot of people. But this season in basketball, when we beat both Florida Atlantic and Memphis at home, both in the top 25 at the time, we put extra security in front of our student section. And we had, me and other members of our staff, I bet we had five different text messages from fans saying, you guys are killing the fun.
Oh.
And so, you know, like you said it, it's all fun until somebody gets hurt, right? You don't want anybody to get hurt, but it's also a fan memory and a school memory that will live forever. And so who's right? I don't know. But I mean, everybody's right and everybody's wrong. I don't know. It's not as simple as fines.
Trent?
Yeah, I'm adamantly against it. That's why I wanted Mark. I figured Mark would be more diplomatic than I am. He typically is. I don't care. I mean, I was a college student. You know, I went to basketball games. It was not rushing a basketball win is not in the top 1,000 memories of my college experience. So I think our young people need to learn more boundaries. They need to learn more discipline. They need to learn that they're not the ones running the show, that they're going to walk into real life and they're not going to be able to do what they want to do and celebrate the way they want to celebrate. And they need to learn some self-control. I have three daughters. One just got out of, you know, they've been through the college experience already. And I had these talks with them. Well, Dad, everybody's doing it. I'm like, yeah, everybody's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you're more mm-hmm. successful when you go into real life, because you're going to walk into a boardroom and understand how to handle a boardroom. and you're going to understand how to handle environment, adulting, right? It's called adulting. And what these college students are doing is they're being childish and they're putting a lot of people at risk for foolishness. And I'll give you one more too. If you saw the stupid ass things that college students say and do on a day-to-day basis, the last thing you want them doing is being around the field in a condensed situation when they're drunk and emotional and doing those things. So I am adamantly against it. I've never thought it was cool. I've said the same thing for years watching those goalposts come down because I did an interview with Sage Steele in 1994.
I remember, yeah.
On top of a goalpost. Mm-hmm. It was her creative idea. She was a young reporter in the business. I'm in Tampa. I'm the first round pick. And they got these ladders and they put us up. And I was scared to death. I hate heights. I'm a member of the John Hand Club downtown. I can't walk on the patio. My stomach, I get in elevators and I fear will. I'm a wuss in the heights. So I'm only up there a little bit and I'm freaking out. And I got on that thing and I realized, oh, it's like a park bench in air. Like those things are big, heavy, steel that if it comes down, Mark's right. It's going to kill you.
It'll kill you.
I love the example that Mark gave. If one of my players is getting run up by some crazy ass frat kid, I'd tell him to punch him.
Yeah.
Like I protect yourself. I mean,
you just don't know what's happening. And there's this melee. And in football in particular, and Trent's right about everything you're saying about like, you know, young people and boundaries, but I mean, like in a football game, and I don't know about the Wake Forest Duke game the other day, in a football game, it's not just students. Like, there's plenty of grown adults. I've got 50-plus-year-old friends who were on the field when Tennessee beat Alabama a couple of years ago for the first time in a decade. And down there just taking pictures and having a great – they weren't doing anything, but we're just down there. And they shouldn't be there. But they didn't – they felt like it was just this memory. And it is for them. It's this memory. I'm not saying it's cool. It just – and I'm not trying to endorse it. It's just a lot of people, and most people, in my experience, do a ton of damage. So they'll go to think about Georgia. They'll rip down all those hedges, you know, or they'll cut out. I remember seeing this in 1998. Tennessee beats Florida. I was working there in marketing, and people cut out. I don't even know how they would have a knife, I guess, that they had stuck into the game and cut out chunks of the turf.
Mm-hmm.
And they took sod home with them, you know, as a memory. And they think that they are perfectly justified in doing that. And so if somehow there was some controlled way to, I don't know, connect players with fans, that would be great. You see how basketball, it happens in basketball. It's players will go up into the stands.
Yeah,
that's a lot better.
They're doing something at Clemson. They started something at Clemson last year in Death Valley, where after every home game, you're allowed to go on the field, and they allow you just a few seconds, about 2 or 3 minutes, and it's all orchestrated. And they're like, you give us 30 seconds after the final bell goes off and you're welcome to come down to the field and walk around for a couple minutes. And you get the point where people do it every single week. Sometimes it's fun, but most people are like, man, I'm good. I've already done it.
It's interesting that I didn't know that. That's interesting. That might be the answer. Yeah,
it works.
That's really smart. And my mind went somewhere else. I didn't know Clemson was doing that. Now I do believe there has to be for school spirit and culture in your athletic department, in your community, I do think there has to be a celebration.
Sure.
You know, and I'd be open. Mark said, hey, Trent, we got 40,000 people in protective. You just win the AAC. We're not going to have the storm the field, but can you get your players and your coaches to sprint out to Uptown on the main street? Like, first thing they do, I'd be like, worried.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
we'll be shedding off our pads and, you know, body surf, what they call crowd surfing, if you want to, near Uptown. Like, we would do that. I do think it has to be something, right,
to these
massive celebrations where players connect with fan base, because I don't think players in general give enough back to their fan base.
Can you ever see a situation where you'd want to spread a relative's ashes on a football field?
Do what?
I've got a friend who got arrested doing it.
You want to know?
I have a friend who got arrested doing that.
Really?
Yeah.
Do share. Spreading someone's ashes on a football field.
It was his father at Wrigley Field in the Ivy at Wrigley Field. Yeah.
No way. Well, you got to let that go, right? Yep. I mean, you got to let that go.
It was his father's dying wish. His dad was from Chicago. He was a lifelong Cubs fan. He went to a Cubs game. He sat out in the outfield. And during the seventh inning stretch, he had taken this bag of his dad's ashes. He goes down and he takes a knee to say a prayer. And there's an usher there. And you know, like, you don't really think that's what's about to happen. And then stands up and he does sign of the peace. And then he dumps his dad's ashes into the ivy and they carry him out of the stadium and they arrest him, you know, and he's like, I don't care. It's what my dad wanted. I love my dad. And, we get that request all the time. I don't know that Protective gets it because of artificial turf.
Yeah.
But at both Georgia and Tennessee and Missouri, we had natural grass. We would have people call and formally say that my mom, dad, brother, whoever was a huge fan, a former player, you know, he died and this is what he wanted. Would you let us come do it? And every stadium handles that differently.
I just want to make sure it's not a Big Lebowski moment where it's blowing back and painting the faces of everyone else on the field.
Your dying wish? What did you told your kids, Mark? I just actually had this conversation with one of my daughters this weekend.
Spend as little money as possible.
Yes.
You can put me in a box and throw me in the ocean. You can cremate me. Whatever is the least expensive.
Okay.
Do that.
Mine was in similar vein. I said, I don't want to be a nuisance. I want to die in the mountains. Don't have a preference of what mountains. Like, take me way up in the mountains. And I don't care if I get eaten. I don't care if I die of starvation. I don't care. If I'm going to die, let me die. And don't let it be a nuisance to all my grandkids and all my kids and my wife and all, you know, all that stuff. Just like,
there you go. Head coach of the UAB Blazers, Trent Dilfer, joined us. Of course, he's a Super Bowl winner as well, 14 years in the National Football League, and also Mark Ingham, the UAB Athletic Director. This is called the UAB Director's Chair. We do it every single week. And Trent, thank you so much for your time. I want to get you on again over and over and over again, because I think we could really expand this a little bit, but I want to do that right now.
Amy's been in the car the whole time.
Oh, there she is.
Well, Amy's been in the car the whole time.
I just got it.
She's joining us, fans, from the passenger seat of our car.
Well, feel free to chime in on this, Amy, and great to have you on board. Mark and I love classic rock. I'm a classic rock guy. We talk a lot of the greatest genre of music out there all the time. AC/DC just announced this past Saturday they're going on their 50th anniversary tour. You get the Rolling Stones playing Jazz Fest in New Orleans next week. And I mean, classic rock is as big as it's ever been. It's crazy. So I wanted to kind of get your feelings, Trent, and find out where you're at. Sammy or David for Van Halen? Who's better, Sammy Hagar or David Lee Roth?
David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth. All right. What is the best concert you've ever seen? And it could be, and just to get an idea of what you like, it could be any concert. It could be Liberace for all I care. I just am interested. What's your favorite concert ever?
One, I don't love concerts myself. I love doing them for my kids, or I like the camaraderie of a concert. Like, I went with a group of people. I really enjoyed taking my kids to them, believe it or not. And I'm not a believer, but I did take my kids to Bieber twice, and I have daughters, obviously. And I can't imagine anybody doing it much better than he does it. Poison, Slaughter, and who else was it? And Def Leppard was.
Yes.
That was my favorite college concert. My wife and I were not dating at the time. We ended up getting married in college, but we're not dating at that time. And she talks about being at the conference and seeing my idiot self go off as well there. So
that was the most
fun I ever had at a concert.
You may have seen Mark at that show. That's a triple kill. You'd be all over.
I'm a big, I still listen to 80s big hair rock.
There you go.
Like, it's still, I have a very eclectic music taste, but one of the genres I will listen to often is 80s big hair rock.
We can do some Quiet Riot, some Slaughter, some Warrant. We'll get after it here on TKR. Finally, one of the greatest singers of all time, and she sings the finest Christmas song ever written. Dolly Parton, Hard Candy Christmas. We both agree that's the greatest Hard Christmas Candy song that was ever written and ever played. I love that song.
I'm going with Amy Grant, Tender Tennessee Christmas, my all-time favorite Christmas song.
Ooh,
that's a
good one.
Oh, that is
a good one. My family, literally every Christmas, will not play Christmas music when we all get together until I started off with Tender Tennessee Christmas. My wife, and I know Amy, she's a friend because our time in Tennessee, and my wife will roll her eyes and my kids will roll their eyes. They cannot start until Tender Tennessee Christmas plays, and it'll play at least 50 times over the time we're together as a family.
Oh, that's a great choice. So where are you at on Dolly Parton being a rock and roller? She's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It just doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a rock and roller to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They couldn't call it the Music Hall of Fame. It just ain't chic. It ain't cool. But Dolly Parton is a rock and roller. Yes or no?
I'm going to go yes, just because her iconic status and being in Tennessee for 4 years kind of taught me how impactful she has been. Like, she's a true icon. Growing up on the West Coast, I would have said no.
Yeah.
But after 4 years in Tennessee, heck yeah.
She's amazing. Trent, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you coming on the show here anytime. Let's continue to do this thing. Mark, as always, thanks for catching up this week. And Amy, thanks for your cameo. We appreciate you being on the big show. And I think
anytime.
There you go.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Tony. It. See you guys. Bye, Amy.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.